Okay, hello. I guess this is on. You reckon? Okay, we'll call the meeting to order now. And the first item of business is roll call. Stephanie?
Joyce Dill.
Here.
Phil Krein.
Here.
Elaine Palencia.
Here.
Mike Smith.
Here.
Sue Suter.
Here.
Okay, are there any additions to the agenda? Any citizen input? Yes. Could you come to a microphone or?
At the table.
And identify yourself, please, once we get the microphone on.
Thank you, sir. I don't know if this is a time for a public comment. This is my first board meeting, so please bear with me and be patient. Frank, would you like to join me? This is my husband, Frank Creighton, and I am Cynthia Creighton. I go by Cindy. Good morning to everyone. I wanted to take some time and introduce ourselves this morning. Most of you have received copies of emails from my husband, Frank, and I, and we have submitted numerous emails to individuals over the last several months reference our son, Jimmy, and his difficult situation. As most of you are already aware, Jimmy was placed in Wisconsin whenever he was only 12 and a half years old. He spent 6 years in Wisconsin. For the first 4 years, he was housed in a dormitory residential setting. The last 2 years of that time, he was in a children's group home. Jimmy suffers with a serious right frontal lobe brain injury from birth, which has also caused cerebral palsy, a visual impairment, a form of autism, and intermittent impulsive aggression. Sorry, this is an emotional time for us. Our son also has a gastrointestinal feeding tube. Our son also has a gastrointestinal feeding tube, but this tube is not being utilized at the current time. Jimmy returned to Illinois this past March. He turned 18 years of age last December of 2012. Given Jimmy's impulsive intermittent aggression, he was considered an emergency case with the state, which gave him priority for services and funding. Our goal for Jimmy was and continues to be for him to have the opportunity to live in a four-person or less adult CILA with other individuals in his age group who suffer with similar disabilities. My husband and I have submitted countless emails to numerous individuals, including those representing the different Champaign County boards. To our dismay, only three of the individuals on these county boards have had the compassion to care and respond to our emails, pleading for assistance in helping to secure a CILA setting for our son in Champaign-Urbana. DSC was approached by the state to offer their assistance, given they are the service provider for our county, and they refused to even submit a packet on our son's behalf. Regardless of the urgent emergency crisis situation that our family was facing due to our son's intermittent impulsive aggression. Unfortunately, our son was placed in a 6 to 8 person adult CILA in Rantoul, which is totally inappropriate for him for many reasons, most of which we have already stated in numerous emails that you have already received. We were told at the time of his placement, this would only be temporary until a smaller, more appropriate setting was either found or created for Jimmy. Yet it has been almost 7 months since Jimmy's, quote, temporary placement in Rantoul, and he continues to remain in this inappropriate environment, which he is becoming more depressed with each passing day. He continues to be housed with individuals who are not able to verbalize and have a conversation with him, who are in wheelchairs and who are middle-aged. In addition, he is now also housed with all female clients in the group home. He has no appropriate male interaction whatsoever, and this is not right, and it is not fair to our son, and he will only deteriorate in this continued environment. Our PASS agent and our PASS agency has continued to approach DSC to serve our son in a smaller setting in the Champaign-Urbana area. And this is also Jimmy's choice, and they continue to deny services to him, regardless of the fact the state has offered the enhanced funding necessary to serve Jimmy's extensive needs. In addition, there are numerous resources and supports available for both individuals and service provider agencies to assist in working with individuals who have behavioral issues and aggressive tendencies to ensure a smooth transition into an adult SILA setting. It is our belief the county board money is not being utilized in a manner that is meeting the needs of individuals of our county who suffer with developmental disabilities. If this was the case, the local service provider would not continue to turn those away who are in need, especially those who are considered an emergency urgent crisis. A police department would not turn a blind eye to a criminal who has just robbed a bank because the jails are full. They know it is their duty to serve the people of their county and the community, just as it is a duty of our local service provider to take care of the people in their own communities and county. Someone needs to please explain to my husband and I why our local service provider would continue to turn our son and our family away when the state has basically provided a blank check for his care. When the Developmental Disabilities Board was formed and we voted yes for the tax referendum, we were told that this would allow for more expanded services to people with disabilities. This definitely has not proven to be the case. In fact, not much has changed. There must be changes implemented in regard to funding and how it is being dispersed. While we don't have the answers, we firmly believe that there needs to be a reexamination of how the county board funds are being disseminated and utilized. We believe that the time has come, and we respectfully request the county board seriously review how our county board dollars are being utilized and investigate ways that would allow the county board to do two things. Number one, potentially put pressure on our current providers in our community to serve every population of disability and not just those that are considered, quote, easy and the easy ones. And two, create a way for the county to be able to approach and entice some outside service provider agencies to come to our county, which would in turn expand the service provider options, which are so desperately needed. My husband and I, along with other parents, plan to continue to advocate until positive changes are implemented in our county and there is accountability in reference to our county tax dollars and how they are being spent in order to better serve the needs of those with developmental disabilities in our county and community. Both we and our loved ones do deserve to have that choice. Please know that we are here to help in any way that we can. And we would like to thank you today for listening to our comments and our concerns. We respect each and every one of you and your positions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other citizen input?
Yes.
Excuse me if I take just a moment. I had cataract surgery, and now I'm getting used to being very farsighted after having been very nearsighted all my life. So it's new prescription and have to readjust here. My name is Barbara Jewett, and I live in Mahomet, as do the Creightons. When Hillary Clinton spoke to a group of University of Buffalo alumni on October 23rd, which ironically was the same day as the last disability board meeting, she said, "We can't move from crisis to crisis. We have to be willing to come together as citizens to focus on the kind of future we want." I think that statement is so appropriate for the state of Illinois and for this board. When I spoke to the board at the last meeting, I asked you to focus on some new visions for those with intellectual and developmental disabilities in the county, especially for young adults transitioning out of school services. And I'm here today, once again, asking you to focus on the kind of future we will offer to young adults in our county with intellectual and developmental disabilities. It is no longer acceptable to tell them that their future is sitting on the couch all day watching TV. It is no longer acceptable to tell them their future is years on a list, hoping someone will die so that they can have a place in a program. It is no longer acceptable to tell them that they must spend years on a list waiting for someone to die so that they can have a chance at a home outside of their home with mom and dad, let alone a home with their peers. It is no longer acceptable to expect families to endure additional financial, emotional, and physical hardships in caring for their loved one just because the school bus stopped coming. Developmental disability services in Illinois have been in crisis for years. The truth is, we're no longer in crisis. This is our reality. But we can shape that reality. We can mold and bend that reality until it is no longer recognizable. It then becomes a new reality. Instead of being reactors, we should be leaders. We should be the shining example of incorporating consumer preferences into a service plan for that individual. We should be the county everyone else in the state wants to emulate. We certainly are smart enough. We have resources. We have providers in the county who have good, dedicated people working for them, and we can attract additional providers to expand our county capacity. We have self-advocates, we have consumers, we have parents and parent support groups, and concerned community members who are all willing to work hard and are willing to participate. Together, we can make great things happen for our young adults with intellectual disabilities and developmental disabilities in Champaign County. Together, we can make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other citizen input? All right, is there anything from the Mental Health Board?
The Mental Health Board meets tonight to approve the criteria for funding for the next contract year. I think there's a copy of the recommendations, the decision memo related to the Mental Health Board, which lists developmental disabilities as the top priority in terms of things that we are going to continue to support. The Mental Health Board will continue to support the memorandum of understanding. It's actually an intergovernmental agreement between the two boards. So anybody that's interested in coming, that, of course, that will conflict with the meeting with Tony Records tonight, unfortunately, but that's about it.
Okay, thank you, Peter. The next item is the president's comments. So I want to tell you a little bit of history that I have been involved in Champaign County. In the Reagan era, now think about how long ago that was, there was an initiative to close large institutions. And we became aware in Champaign County that people with developmental disabilities, those big institutions were going to close and they were going to be sent back to the county. What were we going to do about it? What kind of services were we going to have expanded for these new people? So a task force was convened to make recommendations. I was fairly new to advocacy at that time, but I was put on that task force. And I don't know who all was there. It was a spectrum of stakeholders. Certainly DSC was there, and a number of the giants upon whose shoulders we stand today. That is, that first group of parents who founded the first school for children with developmental disabilities in this county when there was no special education in the schools, that same group of people that founded the first group home in 1980. So we were broken up into little groups, and I was on the group to discuss what the housing would be. So we began to think, well, what kind of, because there was a fairly large facility here at the time. And I don't know if you were at that meeting or not, Dale. It was so many years ago. Anyway, Dottie Cantrell of DSC led the discussion to found four-bed group homes. Okay, it's not a new idea. This is in the 1980s. And our committee decided, yes, four-bed group homes would be what we should recommend to be built in Champaign County. We went back to the committee as a whole and gave this recommendation. There were two state agency people there. They basically said, not only no, but hell no. Are you crazy? You can't, we're not, don't even bother to send this up the pipeline. It's not fiscally responsible. You can't serve enough people. Go back and think of something else. So we discussed some more and we said, okay, we'll recommend 6-bed group homes. And we got the same answer. So finally we recommended 8-bed group homes. And they said, well, they thought that would work. You know, they thought that would find state support. So energy went into 8-bed group homes. And let's not think that 8-bed group homes are immoral somehow. They were wonderful. They're still serving lots of people. You know, services expanded. I think it's very odd to decide just because, you know, for all kinds of reasons that one number is worse than another number. After all, families are smaller now than they used to be. 8 people in a house didn't used to seem that odd. Okay, never mind. Anyway, that is all these years. I have, with CCMR, tried to run a group home with 5 people, and you can't do it on the funding that has been in this county. We came within 3 days of closing, 3 days of going bankrupt. I have loaned personal money to make payroll. So you have to, as Joyce said at the last meeting, you got to have the funding. Now, finally, the 4-bed group home is an idea whose time has come. It's in your packet, mentioned in the, I'm looking to see in the concept paper, is that where it's mentioned?
The Liggus Report.
The Liggus Report. 4-bed group homes are now mentioned, and that funding would, you know, is now seems to be okay at the state level. But as you will see in your packet, the letter that Peter Tracy has written about this, it's not just a matter of people coming with funding. You know, there's all kinds of ancillary arrangements and funding that isn't being supported yet. By the state. So it's not as simple as just saying, well, we've got the funding, why isn't there a group home here? So that's a little bit of the history. People of goodwill have been in this county, have been struggling with this issue for a very, very long time. And maybe now that the state picture has been forced to change, we will have changes here. But you know, it wasn't for lack of trying. It wasn't for lack of having a vision. And so now that's the end of my president's comments. And now, Peter, your executive director comments.
Thank you. I guess one of the, just to piggyback on your comments, I think one of the major differences now is that this is now part of a consent decree. Yeah. And I can tell you in my experience with the Department of Children and Family Services, consent decrees are very powerful things. Just to give you an example, when the BH, actually it was the Souter lawsuit, at one point it was BH versus Souter, at that time the Department of Children and Family Services had a budget of about $500 million. And we, within about a year, jumped to $1.5 billion, tripled our budget, and it was because of the consent decree. So consent decrees are very powerful, and you know, I think that Mr. Records, if you look at the report, is working very hard to try to make some changes happen in this state. And he points out on page 12 of his report, there is a mention of the issue of rates in Illinois. The rates are still terrible. and the rates have to be addressed. I think he says that we're 48th in the country in terms of our the rate structure. So, you know, I think that, you know, it's unfortunate that when you guys decided that it would be good to have four-person homes, that it was only the state that, or the department people that were there answering. But so this is going to be, I did want to call attention to a couple of items in the packet, and the Tony Records report on Ligas is one of them. And I also wanted to make sure that everyone knew that I think Linda Tortorelli actually organized this. There's going to be a meeting tonight at 7 o'clock at Christopher Hall. And perhaps when we get to the agency, you can tell more about that, Linda, if you would. I would encourage people to go to hear what Tony Records has to say and ask him questions. That'll be an important thing. Elaine referred to my letter. There are really some serious issues related to how to expand capacity. There's also in your packet a newsletter from McManus. Thank you, Sue, for grabbing that. But he there's a quote in there, and he says, economically, providers can't expand to meet the needs, and that families are dissatisfied with what is being offered. So it is not just a Champaign County problem. I mean, I know it feels that way, but this is a state problem that I think is going to be addressed, and Mr. Records is going to be an important part of the solution, I think. I won't go into, you've seen my note to Mr. Records. I also wanted to mention that the Association of Community Mental Health Authorities, which is the trade association that represents developmental disability boards and mental health boards, has a meeting scheduled in December 5th and 6th. And actually two board members are going to be there. Elaine is going to be there, and Sue will be there. And the focus will be on intellectual disabilities and developmental disabilities. And we actually will have Kevin Casey at the second day of that that meeting. I want to say that there's that we are shifting as a statewide trade association our focus to try to help address some of the issues that were raised during public participation today. The last thing I want to point out that's in the packet is the 1115 waiver. This is kind of an interesting, basically what they're doing is they're collapsing all of the current waivers into a single waiver, and three of the nine waivers that currently exist relate to developmental disabilities. The requirement is that for an 1115 waiver is that it be budget neutral. That means it can't cause more money to be spent over the 5 years of the waiver. The advantage that the state sees is that they will be in a position where they can get the same amount of money and basically make other, different decisions, flexible decisions about how to use the money. And that actually, when I talk to other people that are interested in intellectual disabilities and developmental disabilities, that is of concern because the fear is that we will end up on the losing side of that. You don't know exactly how that's going to play out. And we didn't really get any good answers. I participated in the call that HFS had last week, and it was, it wasn't particularly helpful, I didn't think. But so anyway, we're putting these things in the packet for you. I think it would behoove everybody to review and read this stuff. We're going to be tracking this very closely, and we will be talking about this I almost see these as agenda items for every board meeting because how this stuff plays out certainly has an impact on Champaign County and certainly has an impact on how we decide to use our local resources.
Thank you, Peter. Our next item is
Elaine.
Lynn.
Can we go back to item 6 and approve the minutes?
Oh my gosh, yes. Thank you so much.
Sure.
And you know what? I highlighted it in yellow. And I don't have the excuse of cataract surgery. All right. Yes, absolutely. We need to approve the 10-23-13 board meeting minutes. Do I have a motion to approve?
We approve.
A second?
Second.
Any corrections to the minutes? All in favor then?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. So the minutes are approved. Thank you, Stephanie. Okay. Be real careful here. Lynn, you're next. Staff report.
Do you have questions about what's in it? Because I have stuff to add if you don't, or when we're done with that. Since finishing the staff report, I was able to visit with three self-advocacy groups. And this was an important activity for the funding priorities, which we'll get to later. But just because of the timing of groups, I wasn't able to do it until the last few days. And I really enjoyed myself. I'd actually like to do that again, maybe without an agenda. Two of the groups had a full agenda already, so they sort of fit me in. The other one was assembled specifically with people who wanted to talk to me about funding priorities. So I got a lot of good information from everybody, but probably the most interesting from that group, predictably, maybe, everybody is mostly interested in where they live and where they work and being able to take care of themselves in the future. And then this came up a lot. Interesting recreational activities were also mentioned a lot. Parties, vacations with friends instead of family, money to buy airline tickets to places like Disneyland with friends. So I like that people are sort of thinking beyond, you know, maybe what, you know, obviously we're thinking about employment and housing for them, but this was interesting and very important. And there were also a lot of comments about self-improvement or working towards social justice and working on confidence. And so that was an interesting stripe too. I found the two categories of comments about employment that were interesting. One are people who would really like to have more community employment experiences, whether full-time or not. That wasn't really an issue. It was just about having some experiences that matched with their interests. Some people have really identified a career path for themselves that's, you know, very specific. There was someone, I hope I wrote it down, martial arts. I mean, there were some really neat ideas that came up. The other category of improvement to employment-related services was people would like more beautiful places to work in. Even people who are happy with sheltered work settings wish they were bigger or prettier or at least less crowded because they felt like they're picking on each other. They felt like there's a lot of maybe fighting with their friends, and if they can't have an improved environment, they'd like to have counseling maybe every day to deal with some of the stresses of working in close proximity. So that was interesting too. And when I asked, I went through the funding priorities one at a time with the first group who had met with me to talk specifically about that, and they were very interested in those two, housing of their own is the main thing, a home of my own, and those two aspects of employment, and then self-advocacy. They all wanted more opportunities like the summit in Springfield or this, you know, the Speak Out conference. They love that kind of stuff. Some of them would like to start coming to our meetings, but these are a little bit early in the day for them, so I'm going to try to stay in touch with some of those people and find a different way that they can contribute to these meetings. I thought that was... But they were very excited about the self-advocacy priority. So as to person-centered planning, it was almost like this is just so obvious to them that they didn't even want to talk about it. These are self-advocates. They're very clear about what they want, and they are very ready to talk about it. So our priority on person-centered planning it was almost like, well, that's, yeah, you should be doing that, you know. But they had nothing else to say about it, so... I felt like it was a rewarding set of visits, and People want to go to Florida.
A lot of that. Yeah.
Let's go. That's nice. Yeah. Thank you, Lynn. Is anything else about her, what she included in the board packet that anyone wants to comment on? Okay, thank you. Agency information. Any input from agencies?
Did you want to say anything?
Yeah, this evening is the Tony Records Ligas Update, 7 p.m. at Christopher Hall. That's on the corner of Lincoln, Nevada. What's nice is we have no deadline for getting out of there like we did at the library. So if people want to hang out and Tony's willing to hang, you can hang as long as you like. So come on out, and I think that's about it. Hope to see you this evening.
Okay, thank you. Anything else from agencies? Okay, we move to the financial report, and we need to approve the claims that are included in the board packet.
Move to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any questions or discussion? All in favor of approving the claims?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Claims are approved. New business, we have in the packet the concept paper for the 1115 waiver that Peter mentioned for Medicaid. Anything to say about that?
I was curious if the board had any reaction to the 1115 at this point. Or
I do.
Great.
Anything the state of Illinois does really is iffy for me at these points. So this 1115 waiver, I always see things like this with a skeptical eye because I believe that the priority for the state is not what is needed necessarily. It is what they can afford in their own minds. So I believe that this 1115 waiver is another way to take money from people who really need it. And I know that's a pessimistic outlook, but it's also, I'm afraid, realistic. So I'm hoping that we can get more information about this and perhaps have discussions about things that we might be able to do. But for the most part, I don't see this as being a good thing.
Thank you.
I was on part of the call on Friday, and the only thing that I'm hearing of some concern is, and I don't know this personally, but just hearing some concern, it's a pretty strong medical model, and there are some folks that are concerned about that.
Yeah, Peter.
I was just going to, this has happened so quickly, I can tell you that ACMI has not responded to it, and it's kind of hard to know how to take a position. I mean, we are, you know, as a board, we could take a position and send a letter to the governor about the waiver, you know, I think that might be, I agree with Joyce. I am very concerned about it because I think that there are no guarantees that we will even have the same money, although as McManus says, it's hard to imagine that they're going to be able to take money away from DD at this point. You know, I don't trust them.
I'd love to see us. When we have talked enough about thoughts on it, I would love to see the board take a position on it when we have enough information to relate it to our community.
I think our history with state funding is pretty much summed up in that one statement that's in the first paragraph of the executive summary. where it says the proposal will result in tangible savings for both the state and federal governments. I think we all know that that objective does not mean that they will provide additional assistance or money for additional assistance. It means they'll try to provide less. And I think it's happened time and time again, and I can't possibly see what's going to come out of this. It's going to be better for us in the future in terms of having available dollars. I don't mean we can't spend them better. We can always maybe look for ways to do that. But I don't think there's going to be additional dollars. I think there's going to be fewer dollars.
Thank you, Mike. I remember I was talking one time to somebody at a state agency about our son's situation, and he just said, well, have you thought of moving out of state? That was his solution, go somewhere else.
I think Vicki.
Yes.
I've been to both of the stakeholder meetings for the 1115 waiver, and I would say that there are two camps of thought as to providing input into the waiver. One is you provide input before they write it, because if they write it and you're just commenting on what they're proposing, then you're much less in, you have much less input. They're going to write it, people will comment, they're going to send it out just the way it is, in likelihood. So I would encourage you as board members to provide some comment to the powers that be before this becomes a public document. Just my thought. Yeah, the timeline, it's very quick. I think the comment period is over in a couple of days. It's like the 23rd.
I was just going to comment, Vicki. You have a very optimistic viewpoint there, because having been in state government, my assumption is it's already written. It's ready to roll out at this point.
I sat in on a conference call earlier this week with IARF, and I think one of the concerns that got communicated in that is that if all of the money gets lumped into one big pot, that all the groups are going to be kind of competing for it again. Mm-hmm.
And just as a hint about that, see the language about nursing homes that's already in the concept paper.
You said there were two points of view. One was to comment before it was written. Does that mean the other one is to comment after it's written?
Wait until the waiver's written, and then they have to have a 30-day comment period. So that will be posted online, and they'll take any input that you have, but likelihood that they're going to change between the end of the comment period and the date of submission is probably not real great.
Thank you.
I think Dale.
Yeah. Can you go to a microphone, please, Dale? Thank you.
I think it's a fair assumption that much of this has been written. The consultants they've hired and to guide this, I think that's a fair assumption. I think that down part for us that are developmental disability providers or advocates is that much of the thing is Mike's statement is correct. It's to save money. It's to manage care model. And for some populations, that works. Serving people in a least intense. Instead of in a hospital, if you can serve them and do preventive care and that type of head, not put them in larger facilities, we all support that for our population. But for the most part, the cost savings they're talking about, the managed care model does not work for our people as far as doing earlier type things are going to make their long terms. Our people, many of them have long-term life needs. And again, if we aren't advocating to make sure we get at least the same part of the pie, I think that we need to again look at this and use Tony Records, as you said, in the Ligas lawsuit to make sure that helps protect us in what we can in 115. So it doesn't really work for us, and I think that there is a lot of the concern there. And I think many people are standing on the side just hoping that we're just held harmless, and that's a bad place to be. We know all the needs that we've heard today that are here.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I have there'll be hearings, right? Do we know on the timeline?
Well, that's the other thing. It's going to happen so fast. They're intent to submit this in December and January. So, I mean, that's okay. This is like sneaking it in the back door.
Yeah.
You're being told you can get the opportunity to hear it, but this is going to happen
The calendar, their timeline is on the website.
Okay.
And I don't believe there were any in-person hearings at all. They're going to submit it. It'll be posted online for comment. So the only discussion that's going to happen is within groups like this and other groups around the state. And it has to be submitted to the feds by February 15th, something like that, mid-February.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other comments on the waiver proposal? Okay, then we'll move on to old business. And CCDDB retreat planned for January. Do you want to say anything about that, Peter?
Yeah, we're moving ahead with the planning for that. We're looking at a facilitator to kind of a neutral facilitator to come in and help us kind of work through this. Thinking about locations and we should have more information soon on that.
Anything about the retreat plans? I realize now that Mike Smith used to check things off. I remember that. That's what I wasn't doing to stay on target here. All right, under old business, we have also in the packet the three-year plan for 2013-2015 with the objectives for 2014, and this has, you saw the draft before, and there was an opportunity to make suggestions, and if you look at the document, you will see that the there have been additions in bold print, and then what's been taken out is still there but crossed out. So we're voting on the draft with those corrections, and we need to approve this. So I'd like to have a motion to approve the three-year plan with the 2014 objectives.
So moved.
So moved. May I have a second?
Second.
All right. Any discussion? All in favor of approval?
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Opposed? All right. That document is approved. And we will move to the allocation criteria for fiscal year 2015. We also need to approve that. That also is in the packet. So I need a motion to approve the allocation criteria for 2015. Anybody?
So moved.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
Fine. All in favor?
I'm
sorry.
First.
Discussion. Questions? Any discussion?
I'd like to take priority number 8, the individual residential service options, and move that up to position number 3. And I think we should add some comments in there mentioning group-funded and community-funded options, trying to encourage some of the outside providers and groups to leverage their support so we can expand that more. I mean, as we continue to hear, residential placement options are something that continue to be a significant need, and of course we've heard that there's been a long-term vision, and I think we want to restore some of that.
Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to find the page. Yeah, Mike?
When I read through this, the first question that came to me was, how did I manage to miss that we had probably seen this before and read it. We had, I think. But it struck me that what I didn't know was how were we changing the priorities? Did we change our priorities from previous periods to the one coming up? And that's the question I'm asking. Are these priorities that are put out in the bullet points on page 3, are these different or are these the same?
Than previous years? There are some differences. The first priority related to person-centered planning has been a component of things. It has not been a standalone. And I think we previously have mentioned that the focus on person-centered planning is important because of the, well, self-advocacy and the idea that the money follows the person as opposed to money going to programs. So the focus on person-centered planning, we think, is very critical and needs to be, in the forefront. Most of the others, we put employment second, primarily because of the law change, the employment first law, and the fact that employment is a hot issue at this point. And then, other than that, the residential services, we move that down to priority 8 primarily because we see residential as the responsibility of the state. Now, we don't actually at this point. We've had less and less of our funds dedicated to residential, and in fact, in some respects, the using our money to assist in that process can actually affect people's eligibility. So. It wasn't that we didn't think it's important and that we don't advocate, the idea was that we are less directly involved than we have been in the past. You may remember when the board was first formed, one of the things that we did, we funded the construction of 2 brand new CILAs in Champaign County. And so that was direct, and that was tied to promises that were made during the referendum process. At this point, it's a different world than it was when the referendum was passed, and that's the reason that order was changed. But we of course are open to any changes that the board would like to make on that.
Can I comment again? Yeah. I just want to make it clear. I'm not saying that we should have a priority to support the funding per se, because as you say, that's very problematic. Mm-hmm. But to the extent that we can help leverage any of the groups or encourage parental or community groups to begin establishing these things. I mean, that's the problem right now is we just don't see the CILA providers coming in. And of course, the board is not going to become one. Mm-hmm. But to the extent that we can help encourage people to take that on as a priority and assist them in working together, leveraging whatever programs that can be brought together, I think that's a very important piece that we can do. Of course, you're right that the board is not going to be in a position to try and replace that state money, and that's something we always have to keep in mind.
And I would support that, and I also understand about the funding issue, but I think one of the things we've heard the most at the public hearing in our meetings has been about incentivizing getting more capacity in the community. So I would like to see us move it up as a response to that and an acknowledgement. We know that as a board, leverage is a good word, I think. As a board, we need to be looking at that.
Is there any other discussion or
amendments? One more question. I think it's important for us to understand that when you're evaluating applications mm-hmm. for funding, mm-hmm. does that not mean that you're going to walk down these priorities? Mm-hmm. And when we move one up, that automatically means that we have to make sure that we are applying that at that time. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying no, don't move it. I'm saying we have to understand that we are putting our ability to do some of the other things, because it takes big pieces of money if we are to put any into residential. That's my only My only concern is we are in a time not of growing funds, but of seeing our funding once again drop down, and we're then looking to see what are we going to do. You know, I'm not saying no. I'm just saying it's.
Which means that family support gets more important when you can't provide.
And when I read this, I realized that we will be using these for priority funding. Uh-huh. And so I thought, well, it says applications which focus on residential service and support options predicted. And then we say not funded by the Department of Human Services. So I was sort of looking at it in terms of we're not being specific about quote-unquote proposals. Mm-hmm. So we just look at, do we get any innovative, creative ways to look at this whole issue? Not necessarily funding a SILA or obviously anything like that, but just looking at it, does a proposal include this issue and acknowledge that this is an issue? And then as a proposal, does it any way acknowledge how it might fit into the whole thing, the residential service options?
If we are going to do that, if we look at priority number 8, I wrote next to it just clarification, because one of the things that I want to be certain of is what Mike has been talking about. If our funding is not going to make, how do I want to put this? If we do something like this and move it up, then what we're looking at, excuse me, yes, we would love to give money, more money, if we had it on residential placement. To prioritize this, though, higher on this list, are we in fact then saying that, you know, what's the point of doing it if we're not looking at funding that goes with it? I mean, I don't get that. So if someone could explain that to me, please, I would be happy to hear it.
Yeah. Let me comment again. I want to go back to some of Elaine's comments that, you know, long ago we had parental groups trying to put together homes, and I think what they found is that there was really no one who was willing to stand with them and beside them and behind them and give them any kind of assistance.
Well, DSC was there too, trying to.
Sure.
I mean, it was agencies and everybody was shut out at that point.
And what we've seen, though, in the last several months is, mm-hmm. is again, several parental groups in Champaign County beginning to try and mm-hmm. build the same thing. And I think that to the extent that we can possibly do it, we need to help them advocate for that. We need to help push that process along so they don't end up having to go back through that same thing that you experienced so long ago. I don't think that's going to require extensive additional funding, but I do think it's going to require deliberate thought from us and deliberate action from the staff members and the board to help folks like that, you know, establish the right organizations, become self-advocates, try to attract outside providers, all the rest of those things. You know, in the end, as you say, I mean, we have limited funds. We can't go establishing a bunch of SILAs. But I think we can take the multiple groups that we've heard about in some of the advocacy groups and help them, you know, make sure that they've got a backstop and a group that can help walk them through how you do this, how to make this successful. So I think there's quite a bit that we can do that really won't require a lot of extra funding, per se. And to put that in a priority and be deliberate about it, I think will probably add a lot of value in the community.
Do we need to change a verb?
We probably need to reword a little bit of it, yeah.
Would that make people more comfortable?
Which verb would that be?
I'm not sure. I think what we're saying, or some of us are saying, is support, not necessarily funding, support, advocate, leverage.
Community and group organizations
right.
that are attempting to establish residential options.
Right. I have no problem with being more clear about that, what we intend.
Well, are we going to revise it here? I mean, we can't vote on something if we don't have the language.
Certainly, I would say one option would be to approve what we have and order subject to a rewording of that option that would come back at our next meeting, or you know, even sooner than that by email.
We could just bring it back in December. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. If there's not an obvious sentence to insert right now.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a motion and it's been seconded, so yeah. It has to be, something has to happen.
Mm-hmm. Right. I just want to say one more thing. I think it's a good idea to move that priority up, but I'm not sure it needs to put it ahead of number four, because one of the reasons that people, sometimes families, you know, kind of say, I can't deal with this family member anymore, find some place for this person to live, is because they don't have family support. And so that's as important. I mean, those two. So I would have to think myself, I mean, we can go ahead and approve. But that's the one priority that I think is as important as family support. And I'm not sure that the balkanization of family groups, which has happened in recent years, I'm still looking at that. There used to be one parent group in Champaign County, and that was a force. That's who got things done. And now they're different groups. And so that picture has changed, too, in how people find support. A mother said to me the other day, I can't join any of those groups because my child has disabilities across a spectrum, and none of the parent groups speak to our situation. So, you know, that family support piece is out there still and has changed how you get family support. Yes.
I think the suggestion about moving ahead and approving this with the caveat that we will come back with a rewritten section, and we can talk about where it's ordered. I'm not sure that it says in here, or that we intended as staff when we wrote this, that it would necessarily be weighted in the order. You know, these are like our eight priority areas, and of course the board has total discretion. This is kind of like guidance areas that we're looking at, and the board has discretion about how money is allocated. So, you know, it might be good just to take the, instead of labeling it priority one, we could do dot points or something, if that bothers people.
If we pass this today and then come back in December with amendments or corrections, would that fit your...
Sure, but I think we're just focusing on that one, how we would reward the residential service options one. I think we're talking about proceeding with the others as written, so that makes it a little bit less nebulous in terms of what goes on.
What? Yep.
All right.
If that's the case, and if it doesn't put the funding procedure or process, if it doesn't delay that in any way, then I think that's the best best alternative. Mm-hmm.
And I would move to amend the motion on that basis, to defer the wording on the individualized residential service options, and then look at that again in December, but to accept the others.
Okay, and you're not at this point moving to move it up the list, or you are?
I would like to have it moved up the list, although Peter's comment is certainly valid that we don't want to get too hung up on the order.
Mm-hmm.
And your comment is equally valid that there's plenty of important things in here.
Yeah, it's really hard to prioritize them. So.
Okay, then they want you to call.
Excuse me?
Call for the vote.
Yes, I will call for the vote now on.
Sue, you made that motion, so you have to agree to the.
I agree.
All right. So. So we are voting on approving the allocation criteria with the change of, you still want the moving number 8 up to number 3, and with the provision that we will be revisiting the language of the residential service option in December. Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Then also in your packet are those criteria for the mental health board, but that doesn't require our action. And there is a report from Barb Bressner on the Disability Resource Expo. She gave an oral report last month, and there's a written report now. Anything about any of this that... And then the last thing is the Ligas update, and as has been announced, there will be the meeting tonight at 7 p.m. at Christopher Hall about that. And there's the annual report of the monitor is here, and you see in your packet what all is listed, and as well as Peter's own concerns about this whole issue. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, lots to read if you haven't. Are there board announcements?
I just have one. I think we've had a good discussion this morning about housing and capacity, and I appreciate the public testimony, so I think we know some of the questions mm-hmm. we can ask tonight of mm-hmm. Tony Records, and I think as a board, mm-hmm. we know mm-hmm. about incentivizing rates. I would just like to say on Monday, the association, Vicki's group, the Association of Microboards and Co-ops, had their second session on employment. The first one was in Chicago about 10 days ago, and this one was in Effingham, and Phil Milsk was there, who wrote the Employment First law, and it was very informative. I had the opportunity to attend, and it was really fun to attend from Champaign, because we had wonderful representation. Community Choices was there and gave a presentation. DSC was there. Pam was there from PACE. Our person was there for Cunningham Children's Home. Obviously, Vicki was there. But I think we should be very proud in Champaign County, because we had really good representation and really good discussions with parent groups and some of the folks that have been have cooperatives and microboards. And so just thanks, Vicki.
Thank you for coming, Sue, and Patty and others that were there. I just wanted to piggyback on this. I was in contact with Phil Milsk yesterday, and there is going to be a task force meeting of the Employment First group on December 19th. He didn't know for sure what time. So as soon as I have that information about time and location, it's probably going to be at the Thompson Center in Chicago, but there may be a video link in Springfield. But I will forward that to Peter as soon as I get that information. It's a public meeting, and I think it would be really interesting to see how they're planning on moving forward with that legislation.
Yeah. And Phil, for those who don't know, has been involved in disability issues in Springfield for years and years. And he's a lobbyist for the ARC. He represents other groups, a lot of the disability groups in terms of legislation. And he actually had some of the same comments about state level involvement as Dale did at our last meeting. So I think Phil encouraged us all to get involved. And the other thing I wanted to say, and I wanted to give a heads up to the board and the staff, Vicki had asked me to talk a little bit about a 377 board, and there was quite a bit of interest in that. So, of course, I will, and I gave out my email address, and of course, I will pass that along to Pete and Lynn. But there was some interest in 377 boards and our involvement, and how fortunate we were in Champaign County to have that. So.
Just to piggyback on what you're saying, the Association of Community Mental Health Authorities really supports the development of new 377 boards around the state, and we've tried to provide technical assistance. I can tell you that Dale and I both, we went up to McHenry County and attempted to help them, and I know that, you know, that slideshow that you did with 96 slides related to how this was done here in Champaign has been distributed all over the state at this point. Probably everybody's seen that. So I think that we have an obligation, because I think that's one of the serious deficiencies in Illinois, is that we don't have local participation in developmental disability services statewide, that it's spotty, and that we're very fortunate to have it here. But we do need to support those efforts.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd just like to throw out an offer. If you and Dale would like to do a webinar statewide on building a 377 board, we're more than happy to host that.
I feel we have an obligation to do what we can. And I'm sure the association, I can guarantee you're going to be at our association meeting on December 5th. Let's talk about it. We'll because we want to do what we can to support the development of 377s. Yeah, and they did one in McHenry that lost.
Yeah. Okay, have we come to the end of the meeting? Any final comments? Yes?
I have a question on something, if Peter could clarify a comment that he made when you were discussing option 8, the residential option. One of, and perhaps you could provide a little brief board history on this, either one of you. One of the things that is in the state statute establishing 377 boards says that the board has the authority to lease or purchase property and equipment to provide services. And now, Peter, you mentioned that when the board was first founded, you did fund some group homes, the construction of some group homes. And I'm just curious why now the hesitation seems to be that you would rather provide support to agencies rather than continuing to assist with construction or allocating a few hundred thousand dollars to leasing homes and then collaborating with DSC, because Jennifer Carlson and her crew does a great job with their group homes, you know, and working out some kind of collaborative agreement with DSC or another provider to come in and run them with the understanding that in X point of time, they will take these over.
Mm-hmm. Well, the original act, you know, I've forgotten what it's called, the County Act for Developmental Disability Boards, was written in about 1970, I think, maybe even before, 63, which was, and it was an entirely different world at that point. When the promise was made when we did the referendum that we would expand residential, and at that time we provided the funds to build 2 8-bed CILAs through DSC. And that was so that was a promise kept. At this point, you know, I think that the board could do things like that, but we've taken a policy position, especially with the Ligas consent decree and all of the Medicaid changes and, you know, the waiver stuff, that it's best for us to let that settle out with the state, since they are the funders. But there is nothing, you're correct, there is nothing that would stop this board from funding construction or things like that. That's something that is within the power of the board. it's a matter of you know, what the board chooses to do, and you know, again, I think that you know, we're trying to pay attention to what's going on with, you know, the Medicaid issue is a huge issue too. This is a long conversation.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But I guess I just look at, you know, and there is kind of the chicken and the egg thing. There are those who believe that you have to have something for, you have to have employment for people to do during the day before you provide them a place to live. There are those who believe you need to provide them a place to live first. Then there are those of us who would love to see the utopia of we give them both at the same time. But when I look at Lynn's reporting each month for the people on the PUNS list in Champaign County that are in emergency need of service who aren't getting anything, when I look at the number of people like my son who do not want to live with mom and dad, who are coming into the system, and that is going to keep going. The number of people who are living with aging relatives or other family situations, that it seems to me that increasing residential capacity in some manner needs to become a priority.
State to so the state is now paying for those residential slots because we were able to get them eligible, and then you were able to redirect your money to do all the employment related, the apartment services, the individual family support expansion, and day programming services you're doing now through that redirection. So your funding not only started at the beginning but redirected and kept the state from cutting funds going forward.
But we also have the problem that people are getting pulled from the PUNS list and they have to ask for extensions because there's no capacity in the county for them to do anything. And I think that's another piece of the puzzle. As Pete said, we could spend days here discussing this. But I thank you for your comments, and thank you, Ms. Palencia, for allowing me to ask the question.
Barb, I want you to know that we would be happy to have a continued conversation, and we're always interested in any ideas that we can bring back to the board. So, you know, call me, set up a time. Feel free to talk to board members, mm-hmm. you know. Thank you.
Any final comments? I believe we're adjourned then.
Thank you. Thank you.